with the family Volkswagen bus to drive Prabhupada to Butler, about 1 hour north. He greeted Prabhupada with folded palms and welcomed Swamiji, bowing from the waist several times. This was not any of Gopal's doing. His father, a Mathura businessman with a fondness for sadhus and religious causes, had requested him to host the Swamiji. This wasn't the first time his father had arranged for a sadhu acquaintance to come to America. Several times he had sent sponsorship papers for Gopal to sign, and Gopal had obediently done so. But nothing had ever come of them. So when the sponsorship letter for A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami had come, Gopal had promptly signed and returned it, thinking that this would be the last they would hear of it. But then, just a week ago, a letter had come. Sally Agarwal had opened it and then, in alarm, called to her husband, "Honey, sit down, listen to this, the Swami is coming." Srila Prabhupada had enclosed his picture so that they would not mistake him. The Agarwals had looked curiously at the photograph. "There'll be no mistake there," Gopal had said. The unsuspecting Agarwals were simple American people, according to Sally Agarwal, who had met her Indian husband when he was working as an engineer in Pennsylvania. What would they do with an Indian Swami in their house? Prabhupada was a shock for them, but there was no question of not accepting him. They were bound by the request of Gopal's father. Dutifully, Gopal had purchased Srila Prabhupada's ticket from New York to Pittsburgh and had arranged for the agent from Traveler's Aid to meet him, and dutifully he had driven tonight to meet him. So it was with a mixture of embarrassment, disbelief, and wonder that Gopal Agarwal helped his guest into the VW and drove back home to Butler. September 20th, Butler, Pennsylvania, home of the Jeep, read a granite plaque in the city park. Butler, famous as the town where the U.S. Army Jeep was invented in 1940, was an industrial city of 20,000, settled amid the hills of an area rich in oil, coal, gas, and limestone. Its industry consisted mainly of factories for plate glass, railroad cars, refrigerators, oil equipment, and rubber goods. 90% of the local laborers were Native Americans. The nominal religion had always been Christian, mostly Protestant with some Catholic, and in later years a few synagogues had appeared. But there was no Hindu community at that time. Gopal Agarwal was the first Indian to move to Butler. As the VW bus pulled into town, the pre-dawn air was warm and humid. The morning edition of the Butler Eagle would soon be going to the newsstands. Headlines on the newspaper. Red Chinese fire on India. Prime Minister Shastri declares Chinese communists out to dominate world. United Nations Council demands Pakistan and India cease fire in 48 hours. Srila Prabhupada arrived at the Agarwal's home, Sterling Apartments, at 4 a.m., and Gopal invited him to sleep on the couch. Their place, a townhouse apartment, consisted of a small living room, a dining room, a kitchenette, two upstairs bedrooms, and a bath. Here they lived with their two young children. The Agarwals had lived in Butler for a few years now and felt themselves established in a good social circle. Since their apartment had so little space, they decided it would be better if the Swami took a room at the YMCA and came to visit them during the day. Of course, living space wasn't the real difficulty, it was him. How would he fit into the Butler atmosphere? He was their guest, so they would have to explain him to their friends and neighbors. Srila Prabhupada was immediately a curiosity for whoever saw him. In anxiety, Mrs. Agarwal decided Then instead of having people speculate about the strange man in orange robes living at her house, it would be better to let them know about him from the newspapers. She explained her plan to Prabhupada, who laughed, understanding that he didn't fit in. Sally hurried Prabhupada off to a Pittsburgh newspaper office, but the interviewer wasn't able to comprehend why this person should make an interesting story. Sally then took him to the local Butler Eagle, where his presence was accepted as indeed newsworthy. Small town newspapers are like that. And if somebody just visits or whatever happens, if there's a picnic or something, it's a big event and they put it in the newspaper. So they put Prabhupada in there. September 22nd, a feature article appeared in the Butler Eagle. In fluent English, devotee of Hindu cult explains commission to visit the West. A photographer had come to the Agarwal's apartment and had taken a picture of Srila Prabhupada standing in the living room holding an open volume of Srimad Bhagavatam. The caption read, "Ambassador of Bhakti Yoga." The article began, "A slight brown man in faded orange drapes and wearing white bathing shoes stepped out of a compact car yesterday and into the Butler YMCA to attend a meeting. He is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swamiji, a messenger from India to the peoples of the West." The article referred to Srimad Bhagavatam as biblical literature and to Srila Prabhupada as the learned teacher. It continued, "My mission is to revive a people's God consciousness," says the Swamiji. "God is the father of all living beings in thousands of different forms," he explains. "Human life is a stage of perfection in evolution. If we miss the message, back we go through the process again," he believes. "Bhaktivedanta lives as a monk and permits no woman to touch his food. On a six-week ocean voyage at the Agarwal apartment in Butler, he prepares his meals in a brass pan with separate levels for steaming rice, vegetables, and making bread at the same time. He is a strict vegetarian and is permitted to drink only milk, the miracle food for babies and old men." That's a quote from Prabhupada, he noted. "If Americans would give more attention to their spiritual life, they would be much happier," he says. So that was a pretty nice article. It was very fair and just basically like a preaching article. And although I didn't mean to say that Prabhupada's coming to Butler was a small event, but to the local people, it would appear to be like a small event. But it was a great, very auspicious event. And see the old, I don't know, I forget the name. It's either Acharya or one of the first videos that Yadubar and his wife produced. And they interviewed Sally Agarwal. And this was, you know, probably about 1980 or something, so it was after several years. And she said, she talked about meeting Prabhupada, and she said he was, when he smiled, it was great. It was oceanic, the word she used. And she said, he was the most incredible person that I've ever met in my life. And she was, she was very sincere and very nice, and she appreciated Prabhupada. Prabhupada understood, "I don't really fit in. They're a little embarrassed to have me in their home. What will their friends and neighbors say?" So he understood why they were asking him to stay in the YMCA and to come during the days. And so it's still like that today. We're If we dress as devotees and we go out chanting, we don't really fit in a lot of ways, but we fit in with Lord Chaitanya. We fit in the spiritual world. So that's really the only place we have to worry about fitting into. So Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5. Some of these verses here at the beginning in Lord Vrishabhadeva's teachers are some of the verses that Prabhupada very, very frequently quotes, like the one yesterday, when a person considers Nunam Pramata Kuru Tevi Karma, is a very often quoted verse, and Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahur Vimuktas Tamodwaram Yoshitam Sanghi Sangam. We're on 5 today. And this one here, like Prabhupada very frequently quotes verses from Prahlad Maharaj's teachings to his classmates. And so this is like, he quotes these verses so much, very much also. So today's verse is, Parabhavastavad Abhota Jato. It's page 171 in this book, in my book. In Hindu. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Parabhavastavad Abhodajato. Yavana Jigyasata Atmatatvam. Yavat Kriyastavad Idang Manovai. Karmatmakam Yena Sharira Bandha. Parabhavastavad Abhodajato. Yavanna Jigyasata Atmatatvam. Yavat Kriyastavad Idang Manovai. Kamatmakam Yena Sharira Bandha. Parabhavastavad Abhodajato. Yavanna Jigyasata Atmatatvam. Yavat Kriyastavad Idang Manovai. Karmatmakam Yena Sharira Bandha. Parabhava. Defeat, misery. Atavat, so long. Abhodajata, produced from ignorance. Yavat, as long as. Na, not. Jigyasate, inquires about. Atmatatvam, the truth of the self. Yavat, as long as. Kriya, fruitive activities. Tavat, so long. Idam, this. Mana, mind. Vai, indeed. Karma atmakam, absorbed in material activities. Yena, by which. Sharira bandha, bondage in this material body. translation. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear. And as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. Please repeat. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or karma, be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activities. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear. And as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. Prabhupada's purport. Generally, people think that one should act very piously in order to be relieved from misery, but this is not a fact. Even though one engages in pious activity and speculation, he is nonetheless defeated. His only aim should be emancipation from the clutches of Maya and all material activities. Speculative knowledge and pious activity do not solve the problems of material life. One should be inquisitive to understand his spiritual position. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4:37, Itai dangsi samito gnir basmasat kuruter juna gyanagni sarvakarmani basmasat kurute tata. As a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. Unless one understands the self and its activities, one has to be considered in material bondage. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.3.32, it is also said, Yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayastabhavad avishuddha buddhaya. A person who doesn't have knowledge of devotional service may think himself liberated, but actually he is not. Adruya krichtrena param padam tata patantyadho nadrita yushmad angraya. Such people may approach the impersonal Brahman effulgence, but they fall down again into material enjoyment because they have no knowledge of devotional service. As long as one is interested in karma and jnana, he continues enduring the miseries of material life, birth, old age, disease, and death. Karmis certainly take on one body after another. As far as jnanis are concerned, unless they are promoted to the topmost understanding, they must return to the material world. As explained in Bhagavad Gita 7.19, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavan Mam Prapadyate. The point is to know Krishna, Vasudev, as everything, and surrender unto him. Karmis do not know this, but a devotee who is 100% engaged in the devotional service of the Lord knows fully what is karma and jnana. Therefore, a pure devotee is no longer interested in karma and jnana. Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma jinavritam. The real bhakta is untouched by any tinge of karma and jnana. His only purpose in life is to serve the Lord. Om Gyantimandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Parabhavastavarabodajato yavan najigyasata atmatattvam yavatkriyastavat idang manovai kamatmakam yena sharirabandha. As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called karmatmaka, colored with fruitive activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. Prabhupada said, generally people think that one should act very piously in order to be relieved from misery, but this is not a fact. I heard one morning walk, I think, and a disciple was asking Prabhupada, what about pious activities? Is pious activities better than impious activity? And Prabhupada was very blunt, and he said, no, they're practically the same. And then he made a little concession. There's so many verses, good or bad in this material world. It's only a construction of the mind, thinking, oh, this is good and this is bad. According to one culture, one thing may be considered very good behavior. And in another culture, in a different part of this world, you see that the same activity is considered to be horrible, very offensive, or when you're, it applies in so many ways in the material world. Whatever we think is good or bad is a mental construction. But so Prabhupada makes the point, and the Shastras make the point in many different places. So any activity in the material world that is meant for ourself, any kind of selfish activity is considered bad because it prolongs our stay in the material world. If you are very pious, then you get the results of the pious activities, which are considered good by material standards, but it means you can't go back, you're not going back to Godhead, you're staying in the material world. And as soon as the results of those pious activities are finished, the Bhagavad Gita says, Kshine punya, punya martyaloka vishanti. When the reactions of your good pious activities are finished, then you come down again to a bad condition in the material world. So any kind of fruitive activity, whether it's pious or impious activity, is considered to be bad. And the disciple asked Prabhupada further. He said, on this walk, he said, well, do pious activities give you a better chance of becoming a devotee or taking to devotional service? And Prabhupada made a little concession. He said, well, yes, maybe if your pious activities lead you to associate with devotees, then that pious activity is beneficial. But just in and of itself, pious or impious, he was pretty blunt that it really didn't make any difference. So even though one engages in pious activity and speculation, he is nonetheless defeated. Everything in the material world is defeat. And it may seem like victory in the beginning, but you may, like a young man or young woman, they may be youthful and strong and have a business and be making money and so on, and they feel very successful, and they feel like they're winning the game. There's an old sort of joke. Everyone knows what the rat race is. The rat race is what you see go out on in the world, everybody's running to work and trying to make a dollar. So there's a saying that even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. So that's the material world. And in the end, whether you're winning, you may be a very successful business person, or even be a king, or whatever, a famous athlete, but your time will take everything away in one way or another time. So everything ends in defeat in the material realm. Everything. You know, Prabhupada asked Satsarup Maharaj in very early in like 1967 or 68, he asked him to write a book describing how, and the title of the book, I think he gave him the title of the book, what the title should be. He said, the title should be Everything, Anything Done Without Krishna Fails. So, and he didn't write that book at the time, but he wrote it just a few years ago, and it published it now. So Prabhupada wanted him to emphasize how everything, whatever, it seems to be victorious, ends in defeat. Whereas on the other hand, just the opposite. If a devotee may not be very good at so many things, maybe a devotee, we're supposed to try hard to do our service, and we do. We work hard to be good at what we do for Krishna, but we're not always very good at it. And sometimes what we do ends in what the material world would call defeat. But just the fact of trying to engage in Krishna's service is victory. That it's all glory, it's all victory. To Prabhupada, translates the opening verse to the Shikshastaka in that way, in one place that I know of. He said, all glories to Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of all the dust accumulated for years. So in one place, Prabhupada translates, he says, all glories, all victory. And we say, jai, jayate. That means victory. So the devotee is victorious just by engaging in devotional service. And all glory is all victory. So everything in material life ends in defeat, and everything in spiritual life is glorious and victorious. And let's see. This is what Prabhupada said. His only aim, meaning the conditioned soul, his only aim should be emancipation from the clutches of Maya and all material activities. Speculative knowledge and pious activity do not solve the problems of material life. One should be inquisitive to understand the spiritual position. And then he quotes a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, which he doesn't quote very often at all, but it's as a blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. So Prabhupada stressed over and over again, constantly, relentlessly, that we had to have knowledge. We had to study. That's why he presented his books in such a scholarly and detailed way, so that we would have knowledge. I heard another conversation with Prabhupada recently when a devotee was telling him, a devotee who had been in India for some time, and he was saying to Prabhupada how the Indians, it's sometimes hard to preach in India because everybody thinks, well, the Indians think rightly that I know Krishna. And they do know something about, all Indians know about Krishna, they know Krishna's pastimes. But Prabhupada was very emphatic. The, that yes, they know Krishna, they think they know Krishna, but they don't know Krishna philosophy. And so Prabhupada was, as we know, that's why we have the Bhagavatam class every day and Bhagavad Gita class, and everything that we do is generally accompanied by a scholarly lecture on the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, following in Prabhupada's footsteps. He stressed knowledge all the time. From him ecstatic, my eyes were open with a torch of knowledge. From him ecstatic prema emanates. By him ignorance is destroyed. So the ignorance of material life is destroyed by spiritual life, by spiritual knowledge. We come to the temple thinking, I am this body. And everyone thinks that they're the body. Not only thinks it, we're convinced of it. We don't think otherwise. Sometimes somebody has a little bit of understanding, like some philosopher or something. But even if they have some idea, some philosophical understanding, like I think Socrates, he's the one that they made him drink hemlock for killing him. And they want to kill me, something like they want to kill me, but they'll have to find me first, something like that. So he had some idea, some understanding that I'm not this body, but still he couldn't help but be in illusion, acting with the conviction that I am this body. Just jnana, philosophical understanding, is not enough. It's important, but it's not enough. Prabhupada says you have to come to the conclusion of jnana, as stated in Bhagavad Gita in verse 719, bahunam janmanam ante, jnanavan mam prapadyate. He would always stress this verse, that if you're really a jnani, if you think you're a jnani, and you really have knowledge, then you have to, and you will eventually, after many births, come to the conclusion that Vasudev is everything. Vasudevam sarvamiti. That Vasudev is everything. And Prabhupada would very often quote the part of a shloka saying, Nate vidu swarthagatim hi Vishnu. I think it's from Prahlad Maharaj, but I'm not sure. Nate vidu swarthagatim hi Vishnu. And he would stress that. He would say, they don't know that the goal of life is Vishnu. They simply don't know it. It's like if you're wandering around looking for something, but you don't know what you're looking for, then, and everybody is like that in the material world. Everybody is wandering around searching for something, right? Searching for happiness, searching for love, searching for a stable situation that they can depend on, some place where they can feel secure. Everyone is searching for these things, but nobody knows where they're to be found. So they simply don't know it. They don't know what they're looking for. There's a good example I had, like the time I was in the kitchen in Kidanagri, and I opened the drawer for the utensils, and I was looking for a peeler, potato peeler. And I was looking, and I was scrounging around in there. I knew there was one in there, and I'm like, geez, I can't find it. And then I realized that although I had some idea what I was looking for, I really wasn't thinking or picturing what I was looking for. And as soon as I knew and established, you know, clearly exactly what I was looking for, I found it right away. So you have to know what you're looking for. But in order to know, in order for the conditioned soul to know what he should be looking for, he has to hear it. Somehow he has to get some kind of contact with the spiritual, pure devotee, the spiritual master in disciplic succession. He has to tell him, this is what you should be looking for. You should be looking for Vishnu. Vishnu is the goal of life. And then when the conditioned soul understands what he should be looking for, and he understands that here's a person who can bring me to Vishnu, then the path of devotional service is open and clear. There's no mystery anymore. The only thing now is to follow the path. Is to follow it. And so Prabhupada, in relation to jnana, Prabhupada quotes this verse frequently from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32, yenye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya. A person who doesn't have knowledge of devotional service may think himself liberated, but actually he is not. Aruya krishchena paramparam tata patantya dhanadrita Yushmad Angaya. Such people may approach the impersonal Brahman, but they fall down again into material enjoyment because they have no knowledge of devotional service. So it's very easy to think that we have such a tendency, it's like the tendency to sahajiyaism, where every conditioned soul has that a tendency. That as soon as you take to devotional service, right away, you think I'm very advanced. So similarly, when you take to jnana and you begin to practice some form of meditation, maybe you have a spiritual master and you have some kind of learning from the Vedanta Sutras, maybe, and you right away, very quickly, you'll begin to think, oh well, yes, I am advanced. I understand all this. And I'm liberated because I have this. No, I'm liberated. So that's a very strong tendency. It says it right in the Srimad Bhagavatam. A person who doesn't have knowledge of devotional service thinks himself liberated. Vimukta maninas means in his mind he thinks he's liberated. But he still has avishuddha buddhaya, means unclear intelligence. So, and that was in the last, in the verse also. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear. And as long as one is absorbed in fruitive activity, he has to accept a material body. So impure doesn't just mean, the opposite of na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. Not just the opposite of that. I want all these things, but it means impure consciousness also means consciousness that is absorbed in jnana. Inevitably, almost always with an impersonal idea of the conclusion of what jnana is or is for. So Prabhupada ends the purport by saying, it talks about a devotee who is 100% engaged in the devotional service of the Lord knows fully what karma and jnana are, therefore a pure devotee is no longer interested in karma or jnana. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma janavitam. The real bhakta is untouched by any tinge of karma and jnana. His only purpose in life is to serve the Lord. That's the goal. There's only one purpose, there's only one goal, and that's to become a humble servant of Krishna. Any other desire, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita states, as long as one has any desire, even if it's for karma or jnana, sakali ashanta, they're all unpeaceful, the mind can never be peaceful. But only the person who is a devotee of Krishna, only a devotee's mind can actually be peaceful. His only purpose in life is to serve the Lord. We may think, oh, well, I'm not peaceful, but we're not advanced. We have to become advanced. We have to become purified, and then we'll be peaceful. At least we're peaceful enough to know that this is, that Krishna is the goal of life, and that this is the bona fide process to reach Krishna, to reestablish our reawaken the memory of our relationship with Krishna. So that in itself is a peace, a type of peace, or the beginning of peaceful mind, is that we know what the goal is and we know how to get there. So that on the way, there are trials and tribulations and difficulties, but at least we know the goal and how to get there, which is, we say at least, but that's a huge, huge, huge step that we've already taken. Okay, so I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
Yeah. What does it mean the person thinks that he is liberated?
He thinks he's liberated because it's just like the new devotee who is chanting, and after a few weeks or a year, he thinks, look at me, look how good I chant my rounds, look at, I'm advanced. Right. It means he thinks he has some kind of realization. Maybe he's been granted some kind of flashes of realization about the oneness of the Brahman, something to do with the Brahman. Maybe he's granted some little understanding. So right away, he takes that to mean, oh, well, look at, I mean, we're very prone to, every conditioned soul is very, very prone to think that we're better than we are, that we know more than we really know, that we're more advanced than we are. So it applies to the impersonalist also. I remember when I first started, and before I read the Bhagavad Gita, I was reading some impersonalist books and trying to meditate, thinking I was meditating. And they would talk about things like, oh, your third eye is opening, and I'd be I'd be sitting and meditating, and I'd be like, oh yes, I think my third eye is opening now. So it's just such a strong tendency. This is my view of the matter, how I would answer that.
I think it's simply because when one thinks one is liberated, one doesn't afraid of Maya.
One doesn't?
Doesn't afraid of Maya. Because to be afraid of Maya means I understand I'm not liberated.
So yeah.
If I don't afraid of Maya means I'm thinking I'm liberated, yes, so what's the use to be afraid of Maya? I was just thinking about that.
Already. Yeah.
Material life.
Yeah.
We don't understand that they cannot go together.
Right.
If we do really care about material life, means how spiritual life is like. So I understand that we can only do spiritual life and Krishna will take care about our material life, then we don't think we are liberated. Otherwise, we still a little bit thinking that we are liberated. That's what I was thinking. I just wanted to hear your opinion on that.
This specifically refers to the impersonalist. For the devotee, we have a completely different outlook on everything. We know that we should know. I mean, we know that if I think in my mind that look at me, how good I chant, I'm really advanced. But then immediately we're like, come on, what the heck? What are you thinking? Speaking to ourselves, we're like, come on, you think you're advanced? Look at you. And but the, you know, so, and Krishna makes all kinds of allowances for the devotees. He understands all the difficulties, all our tendencies to impersonalism and mayavadi, all our tendencies to being puffed up and sahajiyas. He knows all the things that we do in our minds that are just off, just wrong. But he, you know, he's very tolerant. He says, "Oh yeah," and he puts us in situations that illustrate to us very clearly how, oh, you thought you were advanced, but look at you, look what you're doing now, or look what you're thinking now. So Krishna makes, he works with us constantly, like a good teacher knows the strengths and weaknesses of each student, and a really excellent teacher works with each student individually on their problems, on their weaknesses, their difficulties, and encourages them in their strength. Krishna encourages us in our strength all the time. I don't think I did. It's a little beyond me. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.